I cried out to God for help. I cried out to God to hear me. And when I was in distress, I sought the Lord. At night, I stretched out untiring hands, and I would not be comforted. I remembered you, God, and I groaned. I meditated, and my spirit grew faint. You kept my eyes from closing. I was too troubled to speak. I thought about the former days, the years of long ago. I remembered my songs in the night. My heart meditated and my spirit asked, will the Lord reject forever? Will he never show his favor again? Has his unfailing love vanished forever? Has his promise failed for all time? Has God forgotten to be merciful? Has he in anger withheld his compassion? Then I thought, to this I will appeal. The years when the Most High stretched out his right hand, I will remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I will remember your miracles of long ago. I will consider all your works and meditate on all your mighty deeds. Your ways, God, are holy. What God is as great as our God? You are the God who performs miracles. You display your power among the peoples. With your mighty arm, you redeemed your people, the descendants of Jacob and Joseph. The waters saw you, God. The waters saw you and writhed. The very depths were convulsed. The clouds poured down water. The heavens resounded with thunder. Your arrows flashed back and forth. Your thunder was heard in the whirlwind. Your lightning lit up the world. The earth trembled and quaked. Your path led through the sea, your way through the mighty waters, though your footprints were not seen. You led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and Aaron. This is the word of the Lord.
Thank you very much for that, Joanne. And good morning, everyone, and welcome. I hope you're doing well this morning. Today, we're going to be continuing our series around the theme of Exodus. If you remember last week, I mentioned that each week we'll touch on the Exodus story in some way, although we're not staying in the Old Testament the whole time. So today, we're moving on from the Red Sea story to talking about Psalm 77, which is a reflection back on that story, and we'll see what it says to us today. So I was in a store this past week, and I noticed that fall decorations were already out. I wonder if you've seen some of these. There were fall-scented candles, there were stuffed pumpkins in the store, and it's only the beginning of August, right? We're still in summer. I feel like I'd rather be in denial that the fall is even coming and enjoy the summer while it lasts. Now, I admit, there are some things I do really like about the fall, which I try to remind myself of as it gets closer. Pumpkin spice lattes, for one, is something I always look forward to every year. Now, one thing that has been on my fall bucket list for quite a while that I haven't done yet, and maybe I'll have the chance to do this year, is to do a corn maze. I wonder if any of you have done this before. It's where they mow down part of a cornfield into this giant labyrinth, and you get to try to find your way through it. Maybe I'll have a chance to go this year. I think the closest I've come to this is a maze they have at Van Dusen Gardens, which I was able to check out this. I went to their harvest festival last year. It's not made of corn, but of these tall hedges, and they've formed them to make a bit of a labyrinth for people to find their way through. I remember last year heading into that maze and logically knowing that I was not going to get lost, right? But I admit to feeling a little bit worried when I came around a corner only to find a dead end, and that I needed to backtrack then and find a different way through. It crossed my mind that it might take a little bit longer to get through this maze than I had expected. It's frustrating, isn't it, to not be able to see where you're going, to not know what the next step is or how much time it will take to get there. Now, I did find it reassuring to remind myself that many people, including many children, have made their way through this maze, and as far as I know, no one has gotten stuck or lost in it yet. There is a way out. So finally, after a number of wrong turns, we made it to this giant scarecrow that was at the middle of the maze, and then it turned out to be pretty quick to get out from there. After we found our way through, we walked up this small hill nearby, and we looked back down on the labyrinth from above. And from that perspective, we could see clearly where we had been, and it didn't look quite so challenging at all. How do you navigate times of uncertainty in your life? Times where you aren't sure what the next step is, or when God feels just out of reach, and it's hard to see what he's doing. The psalm that we're looking at today is describing just that, a difficult or painful season. If you remember from last week, we talked about how remembering God's work in our own lives can sometimes help to encourage us in the present. But for this psalmist, even remembering what God had done in their life didn't help. It actually made their experience feel worse by comparison. So instead, they go back and remind themselves of God's bigger story of redemption. Remembering can reassure us that there is actually a way forward, even when we don't feel like there is. Stories of what God has done for his people in the past can give us hope in the present. They can help us in moments when we can't see a clear way to go, to know that a way can indeed be made. It's happened before. Now, much of the Psalms are rooted in story, in the story of God's people. The writers of the Psalms reflect back on and appeal to the places that they've seen God at work in their own history, the places where they've seen his goodness. Sometimes this brings resolution, and sometimes we're just left hanging, not sure of what the outcome will be. But stories of what has happened, of what is possible with God, can become a roadmap for us going forward. Psalm 77 is one of these psalms. It invites us to reflect on the story of God's work among his people. It's a psalm that can resonate with us when we're walking through difficult seasons of life. Now, the setting for this psalm is a moment of insomnia. So it's a prayer for those who find themselves tossing and turning at night, weighed down by worry or stress or sadness. It's a prayer for those who feel lost, who can't seem to find the right way forward, stuck in a difficult place with no clear way out. When's the last time you found yourself in a place like this? Now, Psalms as poetry use imagery to help us picture what the author is trying to say. So I'd like for us to look at this psalm through the lens of three pictures, three images that will help us to see the world from this psalmist's point of view. And from there, we can think about how it might resonate with us today. So the first image, songs in the night. What would you say is the happiest moment of your life if you took a moment to think back now? Maybe it was the birth of a child, your wedding day, when you found that dream job? For myself, a moment I remember vividly was years ago now, when I finally found a job after finishing my undergrad in Toronto. I had been job hunting for months. It was a role working with the Urbana Student Mission Convention, which I thought was a pretty cool job, as it involved traveling and speaking at events across the country. I didn't exactly sing songs in the night, I wouldn't say, but I do remember waking up in the mornings, overflowing with thankfulness and awe at God for giving me this job. Sometimes it's easier for us to see God's hand in the good seasons of life, isn't it? Maybe because they fit more with the character of a good God. But what about when everything goes wrong? When we lose the job or the loved one? When we find ourselves in a dark place, unsure what to do? What then? Verse 1. I cried out to God for help. I cried out to God to hear me. When I was in distress, I sought the Lord. At night, I stretched out untiring hands and would not be comforted. I remembered you, God, and I groaned. I meditated and my spirit grew faint. You kept my eyes from closing. I was too troubled to speak. I thought about the former days, those years of long ago. I remembered my songs in the night, those seasons full of thankfulness. My heart meditated and my spirit asked, Lord, will you reject forever? Will you never show favor again? Has God's unfailing love vanished forever? Has his promise failed for all time? Has God forgotten now to be merciful? In his anger, has he withheld his compassion? What can keep you from sleeping? I definitely have nights where I lay awake just thinking about things. For this psalmist, they can't sleep because they are in deep distress and they feel abandoned by God. And the contrast between how they've seen God work in their lives in the past and what's happening now, those days when they sang songs in the night, and his seeming absence makes the pain even worse. From this place, they cry out to God. And the verb tense used here for crying out suggests that this wasn't a one-time thing. The author is in an ongoing season of feeling God's absence. They've been calling out to God for a really long time, persisting in prayer, we might say, and yet their situation isn't changing. We read in verse 2, they sought the Lord but were not comforted. In verse 3, they remembered God but they groaned. They meditated on God, but instead of feeling better, their spirit grew faint. It's like they were doing all the right things, but it didn't help. So if you've ever called out to God again and again to right a wrong, to bring justice, for a rescue, to show you the way forward, you're in good company. In Luke 18, Jesus tells this parable to his disciples to teach them that they should always pray and never give up. It's a story, if you know it, about a widow who is being oppressed by an adversary. And so she pleads her case repeatedly to this local judge. But we're told that this judge is unjust. He doesn't care what God thinks or what other people think. Not the kind of person very inclined to help. But she annoys him so much with her repeated requests that he finally gives in and he helps her. If this unjust judge was willing to help, says Jesus, how much more will God bring justice for his people who call out to him day and night? Sort of like the Exodus story, right? Like the people in slavery were praying and calling out to God for years before he intervened. Implied in this parable is that it's to be expected that God's people will find themselves in places where they need God to intervene, in places of injustice, of need, or grief, or pain. And when we do find ourselves there, we are to keep praying, to keep bringing our requests to God and not give up. But what about when we have been doing this? Right? And God still seems absent. The psalmist here has certainly been doing that, calling out to God, but it's been so long now, they're starting to lose hope. They're only partway through the labyrinth, in a way. They are in the middle of the story with no clear resolution in sight. And yet, even here, there is a seed of hope, which we will see in this next section. Tish Harrison Warren, in her book Prayers in the Night, writes about the place of prayer in difficult seasons. She writes, The believer's constant posture is to lean slightly forward in anticipation. We wait for God to act, to set things right, to show up and work, whether that work is surprising and miraculous or just a quiet change of tides. We wait for God to bring healing to the sick, peace in our conflict, encouragement in our disappointment, clarity in our befuddlement. And sometimes he does. And sometimes the sick die, the conflict worsens, the disappointment deepens, the confusion thickens, and yet we continue to watch and wait, knowing that this moment we can see, this small circle of lantern light is not the whole road, is not the whole story. What might it look like to trust when we don't know what the outcome will be? In this present moment, wherever we are, we can only see as far as the circle of lantern light around us. We can see just up to the next turn in the maze and no further. And yet there is much more to the story, and there is a way through, which is what the psalmist will turn to next. Okay, so our second picture, seas and storms. In the ancient world, as we saw last week too, the sea represented chaos, in which God brought order in creation. Storms were to be feared, and sometimes they required an appeal to the gods, like we see in the story of Jonah. Storms and seas were a good reason to be afraid, and yet God rules over both of these. Verse 10, "Then I thought, to this I will appeal. To the years when the Most High stretched out his right hand, I will remember the deeds of the Lord. Yes, I will remember your miracles of long ago. I will consider all your works and meditate on all of your mighty deeds. Your ways, God, are holy. What God is as great as our God? You are the God who performs miracles. You display your power among the peoples. With your mighty arm, you redeemed your people, the descendants of Jacob and Joseph. The waters saw you, God. The waters saw you and writhed. The very depths were convulsed. The clouds poured down water. The heavens resounded with thunder. Your arrows flashed back and forth. Your thunder was heard in the whirlwind. Your lightning lit up the world. The earth trembled and quaked." These images come from the Exodus story, from that Red Sea crossing, a key moment in the history of the people of Israel, an iconic narrative, we might say, when Moses led them out of captivity in Egypt after centuries of slavery. As we saw last week, as the people of Israel are escaping slavery, God tells Moses to lift high his staff, and the Red Sea splits in two, and people are able to walk on dry ground to freedom. God is shown here as the one who rules over even the chaos of the sea. Can he not just as easily rule over the chaos of our lives? He is a God who performs miracles and displays his power. Even the storms and sea are subject to his command. He is also a God who is committed to bringing about his promises for his people. Can we not also trust him today? And so when the psalmist is not comforted by remembering God's work in their own life, they look back and remember the stories of God's action in the history of the people of Israel. He is a God who works miracles. He's a God who can make a way when there is no way, even parting a sea to rescue his people. For us living today, at this point in history, we don't even have to go back as far as the Exodus story to see the lengths that God will go to for us. The good news that we hold on to is that God was even willing to give up his own son, Jesus, to die for us. And if he would go to such lengths to rescue us, to give us a place in his kingdom and his family, could he really even forget or abandon us now in the midst of our circumstances? Is that even possible? God's salvation story not only makes us right before God, but gives us a hope for the future. The Apostle Paul touches on this in Romans 8:32, where he writes, "He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us, how will he not also, along with him, graciously give us all things?" And in verse 34, "Christ Jesus is the one who died, more than that, who was raised, who is at the right hand of God, who is indeed interceding for us. Who then shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation, or distress, or persecution, or famine, or nakedness, or danger, or sword?" So although we can only see this small lamplight around us right now, remembering the work that God has done in Jesus can help to expand our field of vision in a way, to catch a glimpse of the bigger story of what God might be doing. God has already made a way for us through the labyrinth. He has led his people along right paths, and we can still trust him today that he will bring us out the other side. And this brings us to our third and final image. Unseen footprints. In verses 19 and 20, "Your path led through the sea, your way through the mighty waters. Though your footprints were not seen, you led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and of Aaron." I wonder if some of you have heard the famous poem called Footprints. When I was growing up, we would often find it printed on journal covers or framed prints at the local Christian bookstore. When I was doing student ministry, I remember talking with this one student, and she mentioned this poem as being her favorite Bible passage. That's how well known it was. She thought it was in the Bible. Now, if you don't know it, it's a poem about a man who is troubled when he looks back on his life, how in most seasons he sees two sets of footprints, his and God's, but in the hardest times he only sees one, because it was then he imagines Jesus saying to him that God carried him. This last image in this psalm, Unseen Footprints, reminds me a little bit of that poem, though it doesn't have quite the same meaning. But it's also getting at the mystery of God's work in our midst. So in the Exodus story, the sea came crashing back after the people of Israel walked through, washing away any trace of footprints, erasing them until there was no evidence that God had walked with them there at all, except for the fact that they made it across. Sometimes we will see the effect of God's action in our lives without seeing how he did it, or knowing even in the moment what he was doing. In all that God did in Exodus, God himself was not visible to them. They could simply see the people through whom he worked, Moses and Aaron. So the absence of footprints is this poetic way of getting at the fact that the work of God is mysterious. The psalmist is reminding themselves of God's record in rescuing people in hopeless circumstances, while acknowledging the mystery of how this happens. Who can say what God is doing? Honestly, this is often where we find ourselves today, isn't it? With more questions than answers. Yes, we might agree we can trust in this bigger story, but what is God doing now? Yes, he's worked in the past, but will he show up this time? It's not easy to be in that place, is it? When you have a big life decision to make, or when you're wrestling with something in your life, do you have a place that you like to go to work through that, like a retreat center or something like that? I find for myself there is a retreat center on Bowen Island that has become that place for me. I've been going there for personal retreats about twice a year now for the past 10 years. And some of those visits were pretty happy. And others were during hard seasons when, like the psalmist, I didn't know where God was or what he was doing in my life. Although looking back now, I can see hints of where he walked at that time. Whenever I visit this retreat center, I'm reminded of these ups and downs of the past 10 years, of the times where I sang songs in the night, in a way, and the seasons where God seemed hidden. And yet, looking back today, I can see how he led me, the key people he placed in my life, and the seemingly unconnected events that now I realize had God's fingerprints all over them. This retreat center also has a labyrinth, though it's not one you can get lost in. It's an outline on the ground made of stones. Maybe you've seen one of these before. I find that this labyrinth reminds me of the twists and turns of life and our need to learn to walk with God along the way. In a very real way, our learning to turn our hearts towards God in hard times, to practice leaning slightly forward in anticipation of what God may do, is more important than any immediate outcome. Because it's a practice in learning how to trust. And we will find ourselves in these moments again and again. But we can trust God with the outcome. He is the one who sees the whole picture. He knows the way in and he knows the way out again. And he will lead us to the end. We don't need to worry about getting lost. But there is also a mystery to his ways. He is God, after all, although a God who cares very deeply about each of us. Psalm 77, like many of the Psalms, doesn't give us a resolution. We don't find out if or when the psalmist was rescued from their hard situation. But maybe in this way, it allows us to apply it to our lives more easily, to make it our prayer as well, if we need it. But it does end on a note of hope. When we find ourselves calling out to God in the night, we can remember what he has done in the past and what he may yet do again. And although the mystery of God's work is not always apparent, his footprints aren't always seen, we can learn to trust that he will continue to act according to his character and out of his great care for us. Your path led through the sea, your way through the mighty waters, though your footprints were not seen. You led your people like a flock by the hand of Moses and of Aaron. I'd like to close by praying part of a prayer called the Compline, which is a historic nighttime prayer of the church, and I think it fits well with the theme of this psalm. Let this be our prayer both for ourselves and others going forward. Let's pray. Keep watch, dear Lord, with those who work or watch or weep this night, and give your angels charge over those who sleep. Tend the sick, Lord Christ. Give rest to the weary. Bless the dying. Soothe the suffering. Pity the afflicted. Shield the joyous. All for your love's sake. Amen.